As I said, today we're looking at just a little theme in Mennonite Anabaptist history, belief, and identity, which is peace. As someone in a religious profession who has often over the years had cause to introduce myself and explain my religious affiliation, because basically the whole world outside of Lancaster, and even honestly a lot of Lancaster, doesn't really know what Mennonite is. Almost every time, within the first two sentences, the phrase, "one of the historic peace churches," comes out of my mouth. The historic peace churches being primarily us, the Quakers or Friends, the Church of the Brethren. For me, it's a way of quickly helping someone orient us for themselves in the broad array of Christian expressions. And I honestly prefer it to the angle of starting with the Amish and explaining how we're not like them. Even though many folks who grew up Mennonite actually do have Amish ancestors, including me. Over the last 500 years of our existence as a faith identity, one of the things Mennonites have most often agreed upon, and we disagree with each other on a lot, is that the teachings of Jesus' Sermon on the Mount were meant to be taken seriously, if not literally. Matthew 5, 38 through 39 being a chief example. "You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the one who is evil. But if anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to him the other also." Verna Miller gave us some wonderful background on the beginnings of Anabaptist grapplings with these teachings 2 weeks ago in the 16th century she focused on. Because since the very beginning, we have struggled to maintain a consistent understanding of how to interpret these biblical understandings of peace. Attempting to follow Jesus literally can be a bit dizzying. His life is a story of nonviolent choice after nonviolent choice, but he also managed to very actively resist evil, even if he didn't violently resist the one who was evil. And he often, when I say dizzying, I think part of what I mean too is that he would often give a different slant or an interpretation on a belief or an ethic than his listeners were expecting. Even though they thought they were agreeing on the same thing, he would throw out a different way to look at it than was expected. He stood in between people and the stones that were ready to be thrown at them, that others were ready to throw at them. He called out hypocrisy and the taking advantage of the poor and vulnerable. His choices to not do evil, but still speak against it and not step away from its path, put him in very violent situations in which he refused to use violence himself. But it seems to me that his motive was not primarily piety or this is what I'm supposed to do, so I'm going to do the nonviolent thing. Rather, I believe, in most of the stories, he was motivated by love for humanity. He didn't want violence to be inflicted on someone. And so he restrained himself from committing violence, but he also remained actively engaged in situations where violence was being threatened against others for the potential of for the protection of the potential victim. But I would argue also for the protection of the potential perpetrator, to protect them from being or becoming a violence inflictor. And I think this is a dilemma that motivates us as Mennonite Anabaptists and has motivated us for centuries. Are we preaching and believing in peace primarily in order to protect potential victims from violence, or in order to protect ourselves from being perpetrators, or to keep ourselves innocent? Is it for piety, doing the right thing, following Jesus literally, or is it motivated by compassion and love and a passion for others not to be the victims of violence? For most of the last 500 years, Mennonites actually didn't really use the word peace to describe our beliefs that we would now call our peace stance. We focused on non-resistance, as you said, Mel. because pacifism sounded too humanistic and philosophical rather than biblical or theological. In the 1940s, a Mennonite guy by the name of Guy Hershberger, that is, published a book called War, Peace, and Non-Resistance. And it doesn't surprise me at all that in the 90s you had a class by exactly that name, because of how foundational that book was for Mennonite thinking about peace and non-resistance in the second half of the 20th century. We can turn water into wine, but here's a miracle. All the major Mennonite groups in North America adopted his thoughts about peace as a core belief after he wrote this book. So, yeah, that's a thing. At the time, this would have been the 40s, 50s. Up until then, there were two strong wings of Mennonite practice. Again, this is leaning a lot on John Burkholder's timeline here. There were two strong wings of Mennonite practice. One was greatly influenced by fundamentalism and dispensationalism, and held that it wasn't our place to try to prevent war or violence, but rather to focus on maintaining our own non-resistance. Again, that sort of piety stream. Another wing of Mennonites believed very much that we should join with others in speaking to government and trying to influence the level of violence in the world. And Hershberger's book provided kind of a centrist way forward, which enabled the mainstream of Mennonitism to move from a largely withdrawn and self-protective posture into more active forms of service and reconciling ministries. Still, and these are Burkholder's words, the main thrust of the non-resistant ethic, while refusing warfare, focused on interpersonal relations within the Christian community and social service to individuals beyond the community. Mennonites were influenced and changed by their participation in social service to others, though. For example, Mennonites provided aid in Vietnam in the years leading up to the war there. And soon, Mennonites were speaking out against that war based on the historic position of the church and grounded in the experience of being there in Vietnam and seeing the suffering of the people there. And an official statement of the Mennonite Church in 1965 included a telegram to the president, Lyndon Johnson, questioning the moral basis of the American involvement in Vietnam. So I'm not sure. It was interesting to me to see that in 1965 we were officially reaching out to government officials about things. I don't know if I would have known the timeline of that. So during these turbulent times, Mennonites were pushed to re-examine and extend the traditional teachings as they sought to respond to events in light of biblical understandings. Delegates to church conferences passed numerous resolutions on demonstrations and draft resistance, war tax refusal, nuclear weapons, and war itself. Amazingly, attitudes and positions on these controversies ignored denominational boundaries within the Anabaptist Mennonite tradition. Because you might think Mennonite is a denomination, but there are lots of little tiny Mennonite denominations. resolutions on these issues were largely passed across progressive and conservative lines, which is something I think we have seen, that this idea of peace has been something that at least for many years allowed Mennonites with otherwise different sets of beliefs to gather together in common cause. As the years passed, moving into the 80s, Mennonites began to see mediation, for example, as a major avenue of living out a peace stance in highly conflictual situations. And many Mennonites became trainers and leaders of mediation. Our own Grace Byler here was instrumental in bringing or at least expanding mediation services here in Lancaster County in a massive way. In 1984, community peacemaker teams, at the time Christian peacemaker teams, was formed. in response to a challenge by Ron Sider to the 1984 Mennonite World Conference that we needed to participate in costly nonviolent action, he challenged, if we were going to try to otherwise excuse ourselves from violent conflict. And community peacemaker teams was the intention there was to be a group that prepares teams of persons to intervene in conflict situations, attempting to reduce violence and foster justice through nonviolent action, but not by trying to not be in the fray, but being willing to be there where it can be dangerous, and to be there saying peace instead of away looking in, saying, y'all should do something about that. The peace position has only become more and more complex over the years, I would say, though, rather than coalescing into uniformity across the denomination, I think it's become more complex. As many Mennonites have become less and less socially isolated and more comfortable with recognizing and claiming the ways that we do and have benefited from being Americans, largely because most of Mennonite history in North America, most Mennonites have been white. That's we are not an all-white denomination, for sure, but I think historically we've been predominantly that in North America. We've been faced with a dilemma that sometimes our inaction, while motivated by the desire to not inflict violence or be violent, has meant that we are allowing violence to be done and doing nothing to interrupt it. Or as James Cohn would say when asked about people, like during the time of the Black Power movement, well, why aren't you all being violent? He would say, well, whose violence are you worried about? And I think it's a apt critique of Mennonites about whose violence that we have been focused on largely. There have been times throughout our history when actively aiding struggles for justice has led to persecution. And the half-life of persecution in communal memory is long. So I think we have often felt very justified in being quiet, the quiet in the land, and not speaking up or interrupting violence against others, but putting our energy in protecting our right to be nonviolent. But this is not a time of that kind of persecution here and now. And I think it behooves us to remember that we are up against that communal memory that can perhaps make us cautious in ways that we're not fully conscious of. So what does it mean to be a peace church now? I think for many of us here, in this congregation, many of our lifestyles and vocational choices, at least as I observe you all, stem from a deep desire to not aid and abet violence around us in its many forms, and to participate in changing the courses of systems around us that inflict violence. I would argue that the many ways folks here make significant life choices based on the impact of those choices on the environment, for example, that is living out a peace stance. I would argue that our work to establish a fund in lieu of national reparations is very explicitly living out our peace stance, motivated by a desire for love and justice rather than an emphasis on innocence preservation. I would argue that the apartment we now, after so long, have a tenant living in, yes, as of 2 weeks ago, is an outgrowth of our peace stance, wishing to protect all from the violences of homelessness and poverty in this country. I do want to step back and ask, though, based on my own sort of biases so far in this, is peace motivated by piety and preservation of innocence, is that bad? And I actually do believe that these are very valid motivations for living out a peace stance. Sometimes, often probably, we do not and cannot know what the outcome of our actions will be, even if our intention is for the easing of suffering, and even if what we are observing seems very clear to us. The personal practice of examining our lives for ways we can live less violently is incredibly important maintenance for the soul. Piety, I think, has gotten a bad name because I think it is often assumed that when you say pious or piety, you're talking performance. But doing things because you were motivated to live in alignment with who you believe God to be and who you experience God to be is a beautiful and faithful thing. It's practicing what you preach, trying to live out what you're asking of others to do. And sometimes it's really hard to find it in ourselves to do something out of a motivation of a feeling of love or compassion. And I think piety helps us to make those choices when we don't have that feeling in the moment. And the practice over time of saying, I'm going to choose this because of who I believe God is and what it means to follow Jesus, that's very important. And I think we do ourselves an injustice if we abandon completely or only critique the idea of choosing peace or choosing nonviolence or non-resistance because of piety. But I think the way forward is a marriage of personal practice of living nonviolently to the best of our ability. The marriage of that to a corporate practice of interrupting violence against others with whatever influence we have whenever we have it. And one place where we are witnessing such violence here and now is in Gaza. And I'm so glad that we're able to hear from one another this morning about the ways that we believe we are called to speak out to the violence and suffering there. I'm not going to go into that in detail myself because I want there to be time now for Nick Martin to join us. I'm so pleased that you're here with us this morning, Nick, and agreed to share with us. As Mel said in Children's Time, Nick and Mel and a handful of other Mennonites and former Mennonites got Mennonite Action going, the group that's recently been working hard to mobilize Mennonites everywhere to become a collective voice that can help disrupt the current violence in Gaza. Nick is a child of this congregation, so many of us know him well, and you have worked tirelessly for peace long before Mennonite Action. Here in Lancaster and beyond Lancaster across the country in the past decade. And I'm so grateful for that, Nick. And we're pleased to have you with us and look forward to hearing some of your story about sort of the story behind Mennonite Action and what forms you to be so active in peace and causes for justice. So thank you so much, Nick.
Good morning, everyone. My name's Nick Martin. I grew up here attending CMCL. I graduated Penn Manor in 2007. So from 2003 to 2007, I was a high schooler in Lancaster County. And that was the height of the years of the war in Iraq. And my experience as a young person here at CMCL is what inspired me to be a professional organizer, which is what I've done for my whole adult career, which is over 15 years now. And it's really great to be back here at CMCL. I live in Lancaster City, and it's great to be back here at the place that, for me, was how my political awakening began, and was the place where I formed my values and my identity. And where my identity of who I am really came into being. I'm going to talk a little bit about Mennonite Action, but I also want to share a little bit about myself and how I seem to have found myself leading this Mennonite movement for a ceasefire and end to the occupation of Palestine. So here are some memories and experiences that have shaped who I am today. I remember growing up hearing stories of friends and family members avoiding or refusing military service through draft deferments, through conscientious objection, by going to college or getting injured or trying to flunk physicals. And I remember hearing the pride and the commitment to faith and to beliefs in the voices of those who told me those stories. I remember as a child packing school kits and helping my grandpa fold comforters that would be sent to Gaza and to other countries around the world at MCC's Material Resource Center. And I remember thinking about the kids that were my age that needed those supplies. I remember September 11th. I remember soon afterwards, a girl on my school bus crying because her dad was in the National Guard and she was afraid that he was gonna be sent to Afghanistan. And I remember, even though I was only 12, being afraid of war also because my church talked about war and I knew something about war and violence. I remember filling out my conscientious objector folder here at CMCL in high school in case there was ever a draft. I remember going to Nicaragua when I was 15 on a Witness for Peace delegation with Doug Burkholder and seeing the impact of US policies and globalization on the people and on the environment. And I remember intense discussions about pacifism, politics, religion, and spirituality in youth group every Wednesday and in Sunday school here on Sunday mornings. All of these stories and many more led my friends and I, CMCL youth group members, to start experimenting with grassroots organizing as high schoolers here during the war in Iraq. The values and beliefs that we were taught by our families and by our faith community led us to begin to go to protests, to start organizing other high school students to oppose the war, to table at our high schools opposing military recruitment, and to join other organizations in Lancaster that were opposing the war in Iraq. And today, many of us, those same CMCL youth group members, are still doing work for peace and justice, whether as volunteers or as full-time organizers. And many of us are involved in Mennonite Action. And so I want to name those of us who grew up at CMCL, who are involved, so that you all can just get a sense of how many CMCL youth are helping to lead this organization. And apologies if I miss some folks, but here's who I could think of. Becca Rast, Emily Craybill, Jonathan Smucker, and myself are some of the people who originally started Mennonite Action. Becca Craybill, Lauren Stalsfus, Jacob Craybill, Molly Craybill, and Tara Culp Ressler are all members of the Mennonite Action communications team, which is responsible for managing our website, writing all of our email blasts, and creating social media posts. My sister Emma K. Martin and Savannah Walter were deeply involved in coordinating the DC Day of Action on January 16th. Josh Yoder is our graphic designer and designed all of the artwork that you've seen from the Rotunda demonstration on January 16th in Washington, D.C. Jacob MacBull has been helping to coach local Mennonite Action volunteers from across the country as they start organizing for Mennonite Action in their own communities. Aaron E.B. Good, Lauren Stalsfus, Savannah Walter, Emma Kate Martin, Josh Yoder, and myself were all arrested together in D.C. on January 16th. And I know there are many other CMCLers who attended the demonstrations in D.C., who were arrested on the 16th, who came to the demonstration outside of Lloyd Smucker's office, and who have donated or been involved in many other ways. My experience growing up at CMCL and my family led me to want to take action and live out my values. And as you just heard, that's also been true for so many other people who grew up going to this church. For me, CMCL had the right ingredients to help me experience a political and moral awakening as a young person. And those ingredients included the experience of being in a safe and beloved community outside of the academic and social pressures of high school. A theological background focused on peace and justice, taught during Sunday school, in peace school, and during sermons and discussions. The openness to ask questions and wrestle with difficult topics as young people, and the space and opportunity for our questions and our responses to those questions to be seen as valid and worthy. Opportunities for service, learning, and education through Venture Club and Youth Group, and through teen delegations with Witness for Peace. But I think there's been one missing ingredient across many Mennonite churches, and that has been about putting our faith values into public action. When I was growing up at CMCL, there was public action and protest taking place in opposition to the war in Iraq, led by groups like the Lancaster Coalition for Peace and Justice. That was the place where I was able to put the faith values, the peace values, and political values that I learned from my faith community and my family into action. And if that organization didn't exist, I don't think I would still be an organizer today. I remember knowing that members of our church were involved in public demonstrations and peace and justice organizations, but so many Mennonite churches themselves have been reluctant to step into public protest action as Mennonites. I felt like my Mennonite identity and values were compelling me to take action, but when I went out in public, I was no longer a Mennonite. And that has largely been my experience for my adult life as a professional organizer. My Mennonite identity has been foundational to my beliefs and my values, but rarely was it talked about or integrated into my life as an organizer until now. I helped to start Mennonite Action because I saw it as a missing piece in our faith community's response to injustice. We have shared beliefs. We believe in direct aid. We are willing to remove ourselves from instances of injustice. We have a history of opposing war, and Mennonites in particular have a history of providing aid and of having a presence in Palestine. And a lot of us show up to demonstrations and take public action as individuals. But I felt like there was something missing in this modern world that we live in, where our lives are fully integrated with the economic and political systems that are doing injustice in our names. I believe we also have to fully integrate and update our response to that injustice. And so Mennonite Action is an attempt to do that. It is what I wished would have been there as a kid, growing up in CMCL when I was angry and outraged at the world and not sure where to direct my outrage, where to direct my feelings about our political leaders that were betraying us. Here at church, we have a safe place to learn, to process, to grieve, and to be in spiritual community. And that community is what keeps you coming back. It's what rejuvenates you when things are hard. And a community like this is sorely missing in most activist and political spaces that I'm part of. So the question that I asked when I started Mennonite Action was, what if our faith communities and what if our church tied that beloved community and that spiritual home with public action? What if our faith community was a place where we trained and supported each other to live out our values in a public way by boldly calling on one another to take action against injustice? And what if we did that as Mennonites? What if our church was not only a safe space and a respite, but also a place where we teach and learn the skills of public action and grassroots organizing? I believe that our faith tradition today calls on all of us to organize our communities in opposition to militarism and war and for peace and justice. And I believe we must do this not just as individuals, but but as churches, as congregations, as whole institutions, publicly and proudly, as Mennonites and Anabaptists and Christians. That's the goal of Mennonite Action, and I look forward to building that beloved community alongside all of you. Thank you.